Welcome to Slightly Askew with Nancy at Noon, the show that takes an honest look into the heart of all things that shape the fabric of your entire life. And now, here's Nancy.
Hey there, everyone. How you doing out there today? I have a really fun and down-to-earth guest on the show with me who is going to talk about how to match wine and food for a palate-pleasing sensation that enhances your meal and your entire wedding experience. For all my brides and grooms out there, you're going to want to know this information because it's going to help make your wedding even that much cooler. Pairing wines with food, to me, has always seemed like a daunting task. And there seems to be so many rules involved that if we don't get it right, we come across looking uncultured and feeling like a fool. But like everything else, once we have a little information and understanding, we are able to make choices with clarity and feel good about the end results. My expert guest today is Gary Fisher from Hoity Toity Cellars in Mildmay, Ontario. Gary is going to give us some insight into the world of wine and make it easy and fun for us to choose the perfect wines to serve at our wedding. And he's a hardworking Bruce County farmer making artisan wines and craft ciders with the goal of producing local products that are eco-friendly and yummy. But since I'm not the expert, I'm going to let Gary tell us all about it. Welcome to the show, Gary.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Nancy.
Oh, it's a pleasure. I am so thrilled that you are actually here with us. So how are you doing today?
Good. Really good. Really good.
Before we get started with my questions, would you mind telling us just a little bit about what you do?
We are a small winery and craft cidery. We're located in Bruce County. We grow approximately 15 acres of grapes. We have a few apples. We have maybe 2 acres of apples. And from those grapes and apples, we make some really cool, unique, different, interesting wines and ciders.
You said a craft cider?
Yeah. A craft cider is sort of a term that refers to small batch, artisan, I want to say old fashioned, but not using nothing but full, wholesome, natural products. A lot of ciders and some wines made nowadays are actually kind of, they're not really even ciders anymore or wine sometimes. Some of them, they're actually like a drink where they're almost like a cooler. They're really like a flavoring with maybe apple flavoring with a lot of sugar and alcohol added to it. Whereas we are making so no, we want to have pure apple cider or pure wine. Everything we do is 100% pure.
I like apple cider. My Wellesley's never goes bad or off or whatever the term is, but my other stuff that still has like sediment in it and whatnot, if I don't drink it fast enough, it kind of starts going, I don't know if the word is alcoholic or not. What exactly happens to my apple cider? Does it turn into an apple wine?
When you use the term cider, sometimes cider can be confusing. Here in Canada, hard cider is referred to alcoholic cider. So a hard cider is something that is an apple juice that's already been fermented. It's finished fermentation, and it might have an alcohol content of anywhere from 6 to 10 or 12%. That's hard cider. There's also soft cider or sweet cider available in Ontario. And sweet cider in Ontario generally refers to apple juice that's unfermented. So it's just sweet apple juice, no fermentation. It might have been filtered or might have been pasteurized or it might have been some form of a preservative added to it to help prevent it from going to fermentation or making alcohol. But sweet cider refers to no alcohol, usually. What happens is you take the sweet cider, and if you have sweet cider, which is just straight sweet apple juice, and if there's no preservative in it, if you leave that in an open container, just exposed to the air, it'll actually start fermenting on its own just from the yeast in the air and a little bit of residual yeast in the juice. And it'll ferment on its own and eventually make alcohol. The only problem is when it ferments on its own, you're using wild yeast from the air. You don't always know the result you're going to get, and you can end up with all sorts of different tasting type of hard cider.
Could it go bad, or is it just going into alcohol?
It doesn't really go bad, but it can have somewhat undesirable to it.
Uncontrolled, huh?
Yeah. That's
uncontrolled results.
And what happens is when we make cider, we use a specific yeast strain for different types of cider so that we get very controlled results. But if you make cider in a barrel, for instance, with no yeast, you can get some uncontrolled results.
Okay, I get that kind.
Yeah.
So I've read that pairing of wine with food is just a big myth to promote the purchase of a particular wine at a particular time. I don't know if that's true or not. I'm an Ayurveda cookery teacher, and I've done a lot of food combining. And I know that certain foods eaten together cause certain reactions in the body, whether it be good or bad. It's not a great idea to have bananas with milk because it creates toxins in the body and certain other kinds of reactions. So I believe there has to be some kind of rationale behind the pairing of certain wines with certain foods based on similar principles. Is that correct, or is it just a myth?
Well, you're kind of right on both fronts. Whenever we give talks and people are come into the winery to do tastings and things like that, and we have a group of 10 or 12 people or whatever, what we try to do is make people at ease, because there is no real, technically, there's no right and wrong about what's good and bad on wines. It really comes down to what you like. But having said that, when it comes to foods or other types of, not just hard foods, but other types of drinks and things like that, or whatever you're mixing wine or ciders with, there's a few basic guidelines or sort of, not necessarily rules, but guidelines. For instance, a simple one is, like a lot of times you hear the comment, they say, well, red wine should go with steak or yes, roast beef or things like this. Well, that's fine, but really what they're meaning to say is, red wines generally go with high protein. And okay, it's not so much red wines, it's actually tannin in the red wine. So I know people say, oh, red wine has to go with steak, but reality, what they maybe should be saying is, whenever you match wines up, you say tannin matches up with protein. So if you have a wine that's high in tannin, you want to match that up with a food that's high in protein. And the reason is the tannin in the wine helps break down or alter the flavor of the protein. So if you're dealing with, for instance, protein can come in the form of meat. It can come in the form of heavy cheeses too. So always try and line up a heavy tannic wine with a heavy protein dish or heavy protein food. Now, where do we get tannin? Okay, tannin comes from the grape skins, the grape seed, or the stems of the grapes. And so when we make different types of wine, how we make it will determine how much contact the juice has with the seeds, stems, and skins of the grape juice, of the grape. So if we're making a red wine, quite often we'll ferment the red wine on the skins, it's called. And what that means is we actually crush the grapes. We take the collected crushed grapes and juice in a large vat or large container, and we ferment it in this open-top container on the skins and on the seeds. And the reason we're doing that is to extract tannin and flavor and color, but tannin's one part of it. We're trying to extract that tannin out of the skins and out of the seeds into the juice, and that's what gives red wine its body. When you deal with red wines and white wines and all sorts of things like that, what gives red wine its body, or I call it its backbone, it's tannin. Tannin's what gives red wines their character or their backbone. In white wine, what gives white wine its backbone or character is acid. So that's why when you deal with white wines like Sauvignon Blanc or Riesling, you're always talking about acid and how zingy or zesty or tasty or whatever. There's all sorts of forms of how the acid will come in. But with red wines, you're almost always talking about tannin. A common rule, for instance, when drinking a high tannic wine, which are almost always red wines, you match that up with high protein, which can be meat or heavy cheese, things along that line from there.
When you say you match it up and it helps break down the protein, does that also mean that it helps make the whole meal more digestible?
Yeah, it tends to, I'm not so sure it helps break it down, but it matches up or blends with it. It complements it very well.
Complements it.
Maybe a better way to say it.
And then the white wine with the acid, what does that do with the food? Like what kind of foods would we match that up with? A non-acid food?
Nope. Usually you'll match acid with acid. So in this case, if you have a high acid wine, like for instance, a Sauvignon Blanc, a sharp Sauvignon Blanc, when you have something like that, usually you'll match that up with an acid. So usually, for instance, salads, vinaigrette salads, things along that line, or you might have a sauce on a different dish that's a little higher in acid, just by what the ingredients with it, apple vinegar, whatever. Same ideas, you'll match acid up with acid on white wine. That's quite often why you'll see white wines with white sauces and salads at the beginning of the meal.
That makes it pretty simple, doesn't it? I mean, basically, a wine that has tannin in it, you would drink it with something, a heavier type of food. I'm thinking heavier, protein.
High protein, yeah. High
protein.
Yep.
Okay.
It's a protein you're after. Tannin goes with protein.
That's simple.
Now, there's a couple don'ts. There's always, yes, some simple do's, but another do is with spicy foods. If you have a hot, spicy dish, say a Thai dish, some of the Japanese dishes can be a little spicy sometimes, but Thai food is a very common, Mexican food is another one. If you have a hot, spicy dish, what you generally do is match that up with a sweeter wine, and that can be red or white, but what you're after in this case is sweetness. So quite often with like Chinese foods and things like this or Thai food, they'll have a sweet side dish with, or sweet sauce, I should say, with that meal that you're dipping into as a dipping sauce or whatever, like a plum sauce almost. Well, the same thing goes with wines. If you're serving Thai or Mexican that's hot, you might want to mix that, or you might want to serve a sweeter wine. Now, a sweet wine doesn't necessarily mean it has to be an ice wine, which is really, really sweet. I'm talking like maybe a wine that's a 1 for sweetness or a 2 even. It can be a late harvest wine, which might be, say, like a 2 to a 3 for sweetness under the old sweetness scales. But you don't want to serve it with a dry wine. If you serve it with like a 0, which is dry, which means it has virtually no sugar or residual sugar, that dry wine will, if anything, enhance the sharpness or enhance the hotness of the meal, the heat of the meal. Whereas sweetness, sugar, which is basically some sweetness in the wine, will tend to tone down that hotness and make it not quite so hot from there.
Oh, okay. It's kind of like they say eat breads with spicy foods. It kind of tones down the heat of it.
That's exactly, yeah. That's
okay.
Exactly it.
That makes good sense. So you mentioned dry wine. When would we have that? It's a different kind, right? We're talking, so far we've had red, white, and I guess you can have dry in any of these. Red, white, sweet.
Yes. What happens is when we make wines here at the winery, as with any wine winery, we make red wines, white wines, we make rosé wines, we make ciders, okay? But any one of those four things I mentioned, you can make as a dry red wine, or you can make as a off dry, which has a little bit of residual sugar, or a sweet one, which has more residual sugar. So you can make a red wine as dry, and all dry means is it has very little or no residual sugar, very low residual sugar. So you can have a dry white, or you can have an off dry white, which has more residual sugar. Now, it's interesting. Wine is a fashion, and it's like clothes. And so a lot of people say they're a size 4, actually they're a size 5.
Yes.
We want to think we have a 32-inch waist, but really we have a 34 or a 36-inch waist. And we say all sorts of things, we humans. And wine's the same way. If you go out and ask a group of people, and if we run into this a lot with weddings and that, because we do a lot of weddings here, and you'll ask the girls, well, what type of wine are you looking for on the table, and do you want a dry and off-dry and that, and you'll mention different names. Invariably, 9 times out of 10, they'll say, we want a dry wine. And quite often, they're making their decision based on the fact, well, they feel obligated to say dry because that, therefore it sort of means, well, it's not so sweet, and maybe it's got a few less calories, and they feel better about it. But in reality, they say they want a dry wine, but when we do blind taste testings here in the winery, we'll put samples in front of them and say, just go down the line and tell me which one you like the best. Well, 9 times out of 10, they'll pick like a number 1 for sweetness. And what that is, it's an off dry. They say 9 times out of 10, they say they want a dry one, but 9 times out of 10, they don't pick the dry one. They pick the off dry or the, what they call slightly sweeter, slight sweeter, whatever term you want to use, but it's off dry.
So maybe it's a good idea then to have a tasting before you choose your wines for your wedding.
Oh, yeah. Well, you always, and you have to remember, you just can't go on the name. Like you can have a Pinot Noir, for instance, which is a very common red wine, makes excellent red wine. But you can have a Pinot Noir as bone dry. You can have it as light off dry, or you can have it as a little semi-sweet. You can have it in different forms to suit different people. And so you want to try and sample the wines ahead of time to make sure that they sort of suit what you're trying to do.
Okay. We've covered red, white, sweet, dry. What about pasta? I'm not sure where pasta falls into this. A lot of people serve a dish of pasta for their weddings.
Yep. Pasta can come many ways, depending on how you're serving it. If you're doing like a white sauce on it, and it's a white cream sauce, and it's a fairly neutral, bland white cream sauce, but a lot of cheese in it and a lot of cream, you're likely going to go with a red wine with that.
Oh, because it's got the protein.
You got it. That's exact. Because when you're making a decision based on pasta, pasta itself is a fairly neutral tasting food. What really changes the pasta dish is the sauce or the accompaniment that goes with that pasta. So if you're making a pasta dish that's a white cheese cream-based dish, then you'll likely go red wine. If you're saying, no, we're actually making it more like a Greek salad or a pasta, more of a vinaigrette type set, then you'll go with a white wine. So it really depends on how you're finishing or garnishing that dish from there.
You know, that makes total sense. That just clears up all my questions about matching foods.
Now,
but not all my questions, but all my questions about matching foods.
Now, there's a couple don'ts, though, Nance, right?
Okay.
One main don't. The biggest don't that causes a lot of heartache, well, there's a couple of them, but the one big one is actually fish. Remember I said tannin with red wine? And red wines have tannin, and the reason is it's how they're made, okay? Now, if you serve a wine with a lot of tannin with fish, quite often you'll get this really tinny taste in your mouth. It almost tastes like you're eating tinfoil. And it's distinctive. You will know it. It almost feels like it's coated on your teeth almost. It's a tin foil type taste, like you're chewing tin foil. It's not pleasant. And what happens is the tannin in the red wine is reacting with the fish. So one thing you don't want to do is serve a strong tannic red wine or strong tannic wine of any kind with fish, unless you really like that taste.
And that's interesting because fish is protein.
It is, but it's an oddball. It's one of those I before E rules in the English language.
Okay.
Oddball rule, but once you taste it, you'll know never to do that again.
Okay. Is there another don't?
Regarding headaches, a lot of times people come in to us and they say, Gary, I can't drink red wines because I always get a headache. Or they'll make a general statement like that. And so we talk to them and we sort of feel them out. But once we get to the bottom of it, and then we start introducing some research that's been released and things like that by the different wine institutes and that. Most headaches with wine are actually not caused by tannin, which is in red wine, or oak. Oakiness is in red wine either. They're actually caused by histamines. And histamines in red wine is actually a byproduct of secondary fermentation. I'll back up a little bit. When we make white wines, you take white juice, you ferment it, you make white wine from it, okay? And then you let it settle and you filter it and you end up making white wine. When you make red wines, we take grapes, we crush them, we ferment the grapes on the skins, then we press off the resultant. By this time now we got alcohol in the juice, it's wine. We press that alcoholic juice or wine off of the skins and we get the resultant wine. And then what we do is we'll put that resultant wine through a secondary fermentation called malactic fermentation. And malactic fermentation doesn't create any more alcohol at all. What it does, it's a different process. It converts malic acid to lactic acid. It's a process of, smoothing out, or kind of like semi-aging, but it's more like smoothing out a red wine to make it more palatable, make it not so harsh. Malic acid is what you find in apples. And it can be kind of bitter and harsh. Where lactic acid, well, that's from milk, cheeses. That's that lactose. Lactic acid is in those. Lactic acid is much more gentle and easier on you. So by putting this red wine through malactic fermentation, it converts some, not all, but it converts a lot of the malic acid to lactic acid. And in the process, it makes that resultant wine more palatable or easier to drink. Well, the problem is sometimes in this process, will kick off byproducts, and one of the byproducts is histamines. Histamines, well, that's the opposite of antihistamines. Antihistamines clear your head. Histamines actually give you a headache. Some red wines that have been put through malactic fermentation have high levels of histamines, and it's actually the histamines that are giving you the headache. It's not, per se, the actual red wine. It's something in the red wine from the fermentation. It's a byproduct in the wine. And some countries now around the world measure the level of histamines in the different wines, and they have levels on it. They have actual acceptable limits. And there's been cases where countries have rejected imports of wine because they're over that limit from there.
If a person was buying some wine, how would they know if it's been through the process once or twice?
almost all red wines are put through malolactic fermentation, virtually all. Now, I don't want to say all, but virtually most red wines are put through malolactic fermentation. Now, that's a normal red wine that has oak and tannin in. You can also have what we call light red wines, or like a heavy rosé wine, and they are not put through malolactic fermentation for a different reason. We want to get a different flavor with them. We want them to be more fruity. We want them to be more friendly, lighter bodied. Malolactic fermentation tends to make it a little heavier bodied. With light red wines, we want a lighter body and fruitier. So we don't put it through malolactic fermentation, so you don't get that histamine problem. To answer your question, it's wines that have been put through malolactic fermentation that may have a bit of an issue for you. And they can be, you can have the odd white wine put through it, like the odd Chardonnay is put through malolactic fermentation as well. So it's not always just red wines.
What about somebody who's lactose intolerant? Would that bother them also?
I've never seen it. I don't know myself. I've never encountered that or seen any research on that. I don't know. To answer Nancy, I can't answer that question. That's a
okay.
good
question.
Your question earlier about how do you know, really there is no real way you'll know on the bottle. You won't know. Safe to say that pretty well all red wines are put through it. The only way is to really to buy a bottle of it and try it. It also has to do with how the winery makes it. Some wineries, it's through their process. They're really trying to push the wine through, and it's all about turnover and everything else. Some wineries really push this process, and they can maybe sometimes increase the histamines unwantingly or unknowingly. And so that's why we get a lot of people come here and say, Gary, we don't have a trouble drinking your red wine, but when we drink such and such red wine from another winery, we always get headaches. And they'll say, how come? Well, maybe it's because of how we sort of make it. We make it a little differently.
Oh, you have a secret process, huh?
No, not the process does affect the result, and so we do it a little slower. That's all.
Yes. Are there any foods that are impossible to pair up or match with a wine?
Not that I know of. Fish is a tough one. You see that a lot. Really, really sweet foods, really, really sweet dishes. Yeah, you want to match them up with a really, really sweet wine. You cannot put a dry wine with a really sweet dish. It'll just give you an awful sensation in your mouth from there. You want to go that sweet to sweet type of thing, and acid to acid and tannin to protein. Those are sort of your basic guidelines right off the bat.
Well, I was going to ask you about that. Are there different wines for the desserts that we serve? I've heard that you have to have your wine be sweeter than your dessert, and that seems like it's really a difficult thing to do. I mean, if desserts are often very sweet.
No, that's sort of like an old wives' tale. That's sort of like saying all red wines give you headaches. No, that's not generally accepted anymore. Most people go on, it depends on the level of sweetness of your dish. So if you have a really sweet dish, then you'll want to go with maybe a little sweeter wine, whether it be red or white or rosé or cider even too. It could be any, but you want to serve a sweeter beverage with your sweeter dish. Now, some of your desserts are actually kind of tangy. Like you can have a really tangy orange cake with a really zesty, biting, tang orange sauce to it. And so they'll still be fairly sweet, but it'll have a bit of a bite to it. So in a case like that, you might want to look at more towards a white wine. That's an off-dry white wine, purely because, number one, you want some sweetness in there to go against the sweetness of the dessert, but you also want maybe a bit of acid to go with that zestiness of the orange from there.
Okay. How many different wines are generally served at a wedding? I mean, I know that it's based on budget and how many courses you have, but just roughly, how many are served? Do they serve a different one with every course?
No. Generally, what's been happening, a lot of the weddings we've been handling the past couple of years, usually three drinks is what they're looking at, three different types of products. In this past season, it's amazing how many girls this past summer that we just finished are now using ciders on the main table and as a main drink for their entire wedding. Technically, there is no real difference between a cider and a wine, and traditionally, cider was always made from apple as an apple juice, whereas wine was always sort of made from grapes. But in reality, you can make wine from elderberries, or you can make wine from almost anything, peaches. You can make wine actually from apples and have an apple wine. A general rule a lot of people use, they'll say, well, if the drink has higher than 7% alcohol, it's called a wine. And if it's under 7%, it's called a cider. Another general rule is, well, ciders are usually served ice cold, where wines are sometimes served cooled or chilled or room temperature, depending on what you're serving. Ciders are quite often carbonated, where wines quite often are not. Ciders are usually served in a larger glass, or maybe wines are served in a smaller glass. But technically, when we make a cider or wine, they're almost made identical, and they're almost handled, and as far as the processing goes, identical. It's just really in that final presentation phase is really where the difference comes in. So what we're noticing ourselves is, even I'm shocked by this, how many girls are coming in and they're going through all the samples and they sample everything we have and this and that. And they get to the ciders, and it's amazing how many of them are using our ciders now as the main drink. One of the biggest reasons is when you host a wedding, one of your biggest problems is well, oh my God, you know, the groom's family, well, they're a bunch of beer drinkers. And the bride's family, well, all they drink is really high-end dry red wine or something like this or something, you know, and usually, and then those outcasts, those black sheep guys over there, they drink nothing but liquor. And how do you satisfy all these people you invite? And your college buddies drink nothing but shooters or something. And so what happens is cider is the one of the highest acceptance drinks out there. It likely satisfies 85, 90% of the people you serve it to. So when you have a wedding, when you have beer drinkers, liquor drinkers, alcohol, you got everybody there, and you got no drinkers there, non-drinkers. You can put a glass of cider in front of them and they'll take a sip of it, and chances are they won't turn up their face and give this real stress. But you do that with a glass of red wine and a dry red wine, you put a glass of dry red wine in front of a beer drinker, you can bet on they'll turn up their face and they'll look away, and then you make it really uncomfortable because they feel obligated to drink that glass of wine, right?
Oh, yes.
And for them, it's almost like drinking poison. And so you have to be respectful of your guests, not only of what you think, but also what they think. So cider is a very, very neutral, wide appeal beverage that hits young and old. Years ago, cider was always considered a man's drink. I don't know any self-respecting lady that would ever drink cider 40 years ago. But nowadays, more females in our own winery and North America and Europe, more females are purchasing cider than males are. Our ciders are very popular. We have a couple main ciders. Our one main cider is called Gravel Run. Our ciders are quite well known, and they're very high end.
I think my daughter actually told me she has one of your ciders. She hasn't opened it yet, and I'll bet it's the Gravel Run one. She's 19. I bet it's the Gravel Run.
No, but we're trying to make a cider that 80% of the public will fall in love with. The average Joe is there, you and me and everybody else around this area. That's who we're trying to hit. And we want them to have a very good, fun, pleasant experience with it and match well in with their food or their event.
And it must be working. It must be working if that's the one that the brides are choosing.
It is.
Gary, we've run out of time. And I just wanted to know, before you leave, if you can maybe give two or three tips for a bride to, you know, match her food.
Okay, first thing is match our tannin with protein. The second thing is, when you're dealing with white wines, remember white wines, the backbone of a white wine is acid. You match acid with acid. So if you have a nice sharp white wine at the beginning of the meal is usually when you'll serve a white wine, because usually you're matching that with like a vinaigrette salad or something sharp or an hors d'oeuvre at the beginning that might have a sharper acid taste to it, then you use a white wine for that from there. And the third thing is sweetness. Sweetness with sweetness. When you have a final dish at the end or dessert, you want to serve a sweeter wine with that sweet aperitif or sweet dessert at the end. Another fourth rule is with spiciness. If you have a hot, spicy dish like a Thai dish or Mexican dish, you want to serve some kind of a wine that's a little higher in sweetness. Whether white or red, doesn't matter, but something a little more sugar in it, a little sweeter, the sweetness of the wine will tend to tone down the spiciness of the meal.
Wow. You gave us a lot of really good information, and you also kept it so simple that I think anybody now can go out and feel very confident in matching their foods and their wines. It's been great. I'd love to have you back on my show.
Okay, Nats, you're good.
Okay, this has been really fun. Thank you very much, Gary, and thanks everyone for listening. Until next time, have a great week.
Thanks for joining us on Slightly Askew with Nancy at Noon. We've enjoyed your company and hope it's been fun for you too. If you like what you're hearing, please share us with your friends and family because they might like us too. We've got fascinating blog posts, recipes, self-help books, weight loss CDs, coaching programs, art, jewelry, and all kinds of other cool stuff. Go ahead, check us out. You'll be glad you did.